The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have Adam Archuleta on today's show. Arch did the game for CBS on Sunday. He's actually done Kyler. And the week before, he did the Cardinals at Cleveland. Two different teams, different outcomes, obviously. We will have Adam Archuleta with us. That comes up at 10:20. And then John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, all things around college football. What is going on with U of A and their financial duress that they're under, according to President Robbins? And how does this impact Jed Fish? And Jed Fish's name has shown up on some national radars now. The coaching carousel started in full force. Does John believe that Jed is going to leave the U of A? We have U of A in a huge game against Utah, and I think Arizona State's in a big game too, and I'll talk about that here momentarily. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always. We appreciate Desert Financial Credit Union, Jeff Mishi, and their support. It's a good weekend. I found myself in a space where I went to golf. I went over to the senior PGA down at the Phoenix Country Club, watched Vijay Singh and watched him get around the course. Thursday night, I went to a high school playoff game. Just wanted to check it out. The Open starts this week. And then I've got into the college football scene on Saturday night. And yesterday I watched a lot of NFL and took in the Suns game a little bit last night. And the big takeaway from all of this to me is the conversation that you're going to have around your water coolers and with your friends on the golf course and with your buddies at the bar or just sitting around hanging out is, are the Cardinals better off having Kyler Murray here next year than they would be if Kyler Murray were not here next year? Pretty simple. And we all know, or if you don't know, the Cardinals have two first-round draft picks. They have six picks in the upcoming NFL draft in April. They are going to have one of the top picks. I don't know if it'll be number one overall. Winning against Atlanta doesn't help. They have kind of a playoff game for the number one pick because they play at Houston this Sunday. Right? This was a game that was circled like, okay, these two teams are going to be terrible. They're going to be fighting over the number one pick. If you've been following college football, you've been watching Caleb Williams, Michael Penix Jr., the two quarterbacks. There's other players, Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver at Ohio State. I believe the Cardinals need help on the defensive side of the football if they have the number one overall pick, but you could trade Kyler Murray and bring in just a boatload. We could do show after show after show. Like, it was interesting on Sunday to watch Kyler Murray. It was interesting to watch the Cardinals because we've been like, okay, they have this new coach that's come in. I like what the general manager has done. The new head coach, it's his first time doing this. So you have to have some grace. You have to look at it and say, can this guy make it work? And you can't really give a definitive answer when they don't have all the pieces in place. So here the Cardinals are yesterday. They had to rally to a victory. Kyler did that. I've been talking about how Trey McBride has been one of the very few very good draft picks from the previous regime. He was tremendous yesterday. Yeah, I mean, you had to go back to Rob Awalt in your history books. And those of you that are north of 45 probably have heard of Rob Awalt. That's where the Cardinals, the last time they had a tight end that caught over 100 yards in a game. It's a long time ago. I had none of this. And then Kyler rallied them. And there was the usual, I didn't like this play call, didn't like that play call. James Conner looked tremendous. Michael Wilson continues to develop, I think, as a very good rookie receiver. They didn't have DJ Humphries up front. They were able to come away with a win. And Atlanta's not a bad team, okay? So they get the victory, and then it goes right to, okay, do they keep Kyler? We're sitting here in mid-November. We're going to have this conversation all the way until the new NFL calendar opens up in March. And then we're probably going to have the conversation even more. Like, okay, who would pay a king's ransom? Let's just say the Cardinals didn't get the number one overall pick. But let's just say they're sitting there saying, yeah, you know, Kyler is, we're really happy with him. We're not over the moon happy with him. and the team with the number one overall pick. And you know, you're sitting here with all sorts of options. Some of it obviously has to make sense from a cap standpoint. Some of it's just pure entertainment side of it. I'd like this player. I'd like this player. And I'm not going to sit here and squash that today. It's mid-November. So for the Cardinals getting a win, a little bit of positive mojo around them to start to go down the path of this is the greatest thing ever. That's one thing in our market that I know to be true, having been here now 30 years. It'll be 30 years I've been here on December 10th. In fact, it was just over 30 years ago I did my audition to come here. It was November 10th. Yeah. November 10th of 93. One night audition, KTAR. Sometime I'll tell that story. So in 30 years, I know that it just takes one win and everybody gets all excited. Like the minute the Suns win a game, oh my gosh, the Suns, they look so great. And then Suns get beat by Oklahoma City last night, who just looks better. And by the way, Devin didn't play again. And so the Suns end up, the Suns were so bad last night. I'll just throw it out there. When you're 2 of 21 shooting in the fourth quarter, I don't care what level, you're not going to win anything. But I don't really care. It's November. Sorry to take all that out. I watched Arizona beat Duke on Friday night, and college basketball, greater than, you know, the symbol greater than and less than. College basketball is greater than by a mile and a half than the NBA trying this tournament with a colored court. It's still basketball. It feels like the NBA is just forcing this on. It's like, see, look at us, look at us. And so I'm watching U of A Duke, and I was glued to it, just glued. It was great basketball. Caleb Love, tremendous. Cameron Crazy is going all out. That's a big-time win for them. I watched some of GCU yesterday take out NAU. I have not seen ASU in person. I haven't even watched ASU yet. They played two games. So on the college basketball side of things, I'm more into that. College football is one of our bread and butters here. It's been this way for years because most everybody in town just likes to focus on the pro teams and be told they're the greatest thing ever. And well, look at, there's more impressions, there's more clicks, there's more views. And I'm just kind of like, I don't care. Team stinks, they stink. You know, let's just call it as it is. Let's not sit here and dangle around with each other under the table about how great they are when they're not. And so on the college end, I find it fascinating. Saturday night, I'm sitting here watching ASU beat UCLA. I did not see U of A in Colorado. I'm not one of those guys that sits here and just does 12 hours of football. God made a DVR for a reason. It's right over here. It's the greatest thing ever. So I didn't watch it live. The Sun Devils and Wildcats, and we're going to talk to John Wilner about this. What a tremendous time for all of us here in the Valley and in the state, because the Territorial Cup is actually going to mean something this year. And you'll be one of those with maroon socks above your kneecaps and gold shorts below your ankles. Oh, it means something every year. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. You may think it does, but when your team stinks every year, and these two teams usually every year are not good. Well, you didn't go to ASU. Yep. Didn't go to U of A either. Don't care. So I feel like it's something I'm going to write more about. It's something I'm going to talk more about. And it's just really interesting how finally, like this Saturday, ASU has Oregon at home. We've got Oregon here, 2 p.m. Why would you not want to go to that? U of A has Utah. It's a big time showdown, even though Utah is not what they were last season. Both these games are here, and then it sets up next week. For ASU, it's two bowl games. It's two bowl games. Beat Oregon, beat U of A. Doesn't matter, you don't go to a bowl game. Doesn't matter. U of A, if you got Utah, I mean, they could win 9 games. So we'll talk with John Wilner about that in about 15 minutes. But up next, Adam Archuleta, CBS Sports, was in the booth last 2 weeks doing the games, the Cardinals, and what did he see out of Kyler Murray and much more. That's next. All right, as promised, Arch is with us. Adam Archuleta, former Sun Devil, former Chandler Wolf, former, Well, you've been at CBS Sports Network, but now you're at CBS Sports. That's not former, right? I mean, that's where you cut your teeth in doing games. So the former's
Yeah, well, I cut my teeth. Well, you could say former in shape and, you know, decently put together. You could throw that in there.
I like that.
Yeah.
Former NFLer.
Yeah, you can say former. I really cut my teeth at Fox Sports Arizona doing high school games here.
Yeah.
So that's where it started. So there you go.
What were you thinking yesterday? Well, let me just back it up. You've been with the Cardinals the last 2 weeks with CBS. And yep. CBS does not carry NFC games, and they don't carry NFC home games. So just through a scheduling quirk or whatever was agreed to, you had to stay home for the game on Sunday against Atlanta. But the week before, you went to Cleveland. I have been joking on my show that Adam should have got hazard pay for that game. That game set the game back a lot of years. But you've been around this franchise now the last 2 weeks. And for all your preparation, I know this about you, you prep and do a lot. What is your big takeaway about first where the franchise is? I'll get into Kyler and all that, but where is the franchise just being around them the last couple of weeks?
Well, Brad, as you know, just being around this game, when you're asking about the state of a franchise, it's always centered around the quarterback, really. Let's be honest, because okay. Without that position, then you're just filling holes. Right. And so obviously this season was very challenging for the Cardinals. I think Josh Dobbs did a good job, but certainly you kind of felt like this was a rebuilding and they're just trying to figure things out. Mm-hmm. We all know we don't need to rehash. There's so many questions around Kyler Murray. Right. There's so many unknowns, and going into this game, it's like, well, what version are we going to see? I've done, just for context, I've done Deshaun Watson his second game back last year, and I've had him a few times this year. And, you know, when you're around away from the game, it's, you got to expect a certain amount of rust. So we had no idea what to expect, especially considering new offense, new everything. So to answer your question, the state of the franchise is, without knowing that piece of it, it's really hard to figure out who they are and what they're going to be. Having said that, I feel like they've done a pretty good job this year, considering their defense. They've had a bunch of injuries. The defense has played pretty well. They haven't made a ton of plays, a ton of splash plays. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line, they've had some injuries. The fact that they've been able to run the ball as well as they have has been promising. So I think it's been a pretty good, all things considering, even though you're only sitting here with two wins, I think it's been a pretty solid year for the Cardinals.
Okay.
I know that sounds weird,
yeah.
Right? But look, there's a lot going on with this franchise and starting over and resetting. And again, the quarterback question is the big one.
Sure, because everyone in my circles is in the, do they keep Kyler or do they use the number one pick on Kyler and what does he show? So I'll just go to the football side of it. What did you see Sunday that really caught your eye, or were you like, you know what, this is what he's been? I wasn't really that surprised by how effective he was.
I was surprised just because of everything that was going on yesterday. Coming off of an ACL, I've seen a bunch of guys, it just doesn't happen right away. Let's be honest. You've got to play this game to be good at this game. The game is too hard. So to me, it was like, okay, his mobility, as we know, is a huge factor in his game. Well, he's coming off the ACL. It's his first game back. Is he going to be able to run like it? Is he going to be confident? Is he going to be tentative? Is he going to be hesitant? Like, there's so many unknowns. To me, I know there's probably things he'd like back, but to me, it felt like he was never hurt. He looked like him. I think that was very promising. I thought it was a very promising start for him. And I am excited to see how he integrates into this offense and just how he grows. I want to see, does he stay the old Kyler Murray, which is capable of big games? Or does he actually grow And does he take it to another level and grow as actually not just an athlete, but a complete quarterback?
Adam Archuleta with us for a few minutes. I'm going to pull the curtain back to follow up on what you just talked about. And that is, I don't know, in your production meetings, okay, production meetings Friday, Saturday, did you get Kyler? Were you guys able to sit and visit you and Spiro, visit with him a little bit? And if so, what did you take away from? Because in that setting, it's pretty laid back from what I've seen. Yeah. It could be somewhat confrontational if it's somebody that doesn't like somebody, but by and large, it's pretty laid back. Did you deal with him at all during the week, just one-on-one?
Yeah, it's for the most part, the production meetings go pretty well. What I took away from him, he was really kind of the same as he's always been, but he's a pretty, you know, pretty candid guy that kind of just says how he feels. You know, he doesn't really have a filter. So we appreciate that.
Yes, we love that.
Absolutely. That's the best when guys, and there's a bit of a trust factor that we're not going to hang him out to dry, but I just enjoy guys that feel comfortable to just be themselves. And I don't think Kyler ever is going to be a phony or a fake, right? He's going to be who he is regardless. So he seemed like the same guy, but really what I took away from it is, and I really, this is a big part of not just the game, but just in my personal life. I love the mental aspect of high performers. I love studying that. And his mentality and really the way he speaks, it really kind of shows you why he has been able to play at the elite level that he's played in his career, because he truly doesn't believe there's anything he can't do. Mm. Now, we look at it from the outside in and we say, look, there's height limitations. Let's be honest. It's hard to be a consistent quarterback in this league at 5'10". That's just the reality of it. I really, truly got the impression from talking to him that he wasn't worried one bit about his knee at all. Like, he felt like he really was going to go out there and just play well. Like, he didn't expect there to be a shaking off the rust period. And to me, that is an elite mindset trait. You know, just to have zero doubt and just ultimate belief that I'm this guy, I'm a baller, and this is what I do. That I think is one of his more impressive skills.
Yeah. When the late Kobe Bryant would come into town, or Karl Malone, right, Hall of Famer, Karl would go run all the stairs of the arena and then go score 38 and grab 15 boards and just rip the heart out of the Suns. Kobe would just show up, walk in, I own this place, kick everybody's ass, walk out, usually with a victory. He was the villain that everybody loved to hate. I think there's some of that with Kyler, where you just walk in and it's like, yeah, I got this, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's, I admire that's the trait that we all aspire to live in all the time. It's almost has to be a somewhat delusional trait, where there's everybody else sees this reality, but like, you're oblivious to it, that all that matters is, this is who I am and stop me. Right. And I love that about him. So again, I have questions. You know, one thing that you realize too, in this business, is just, there's a lot of stories and there's a lot of narratives and there's a lot of things said about Kyler and other players. But unless you're really in there, you really never know what the reality is. So you've got to go into it without having a bias of things that you've heard, and just really trust, especially in my position, your eyes and what do you see? Right. That's what's important to me. And so I think there's questions he has to answer, but there's no doubt he is capable of having elite games. He is an elite competitor. He is an elite performer. The question is, can he do it consistently, week in and week out, for 17 games? And can he grow as a quarterback and not just rely on his athletic ability?
I'll get you out of here off this. Adam Archuleta with us. We appreciate his time. CBS Sports. He's done the last 2 weeks of Cardinal games. Jonathan Gannon, your impressions and meetings with him. Fans don't really know him. First year head coach. You've seen the team now twice. What do you think?
Yeah, again, it's really hard to get a sense, because this is kind of a strange year for them. Mm-hmm. I'll say that having to deal with what he's had to deal with, I think that he has gotten this football team ready to play every single week. And I think that's really, really tough to do, especially when, you know, before this game, you only had one win. To be able to sit up there every single day in front of your team, knowing that you have a losing record, you have one win, midway through the season, that is hard to do. You see this football team, you know, outside of the Cleveland game, they compete and they play hard, and it's only really kind of a few plays every few games. So I do think that for a football coach in year one of his system, trying to bring everybody in, navigating the quarterback situation, I think you have to be impressed with the leadership job that he's done. And when you talk to people that are in the organization and close to the organization, I know everybody likes to, you know, talk highly of everybody, but they really do feel like his coaching style and his tough coaching style and his willingness to hold everybody, and especially the quarterback, to a higher standard. That's kind of what Kyler Murray needs. And if he can continue to do that and get the most out of him, then I think he's going to be successful.
Adam, I appreciate your time and insight as always. I'll let you go off that. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. Anytime.
Adam Archuleta, and we're back with more after this timeout. It is Monday, and that means John Wilner drops in. Wilner Hotline, all things across the college football fruited plain, in particular on the Pac-12 conference, what remains of it for, I don't know, a few more weeks. We, of course, have John's content on sports360az.com. He's syndicated throughout the country as well. All right, where do you want to start? Because we have U of A in financial trouble, which is interesting. We have actually a weekend that matters coming up here in Arizona in late mid-November, which never happens, John. By now, both U of A and ASU are just over with. One coach is going to get fired, all that. This year, one can be the spoiler in ASU. The other is U of A, how high a bowl game. At what point do we start hearing Jed Fish's name associated with some of these jobs? Now the coaching carousel has started to spin. Where do you want to start, John?
We already have. We already have a national publication linked Fish to the candidate list at Texas A&M. Now, That's just pure speculation, right? Kalen DeBoer from Washington, Dan Lanning from Oregon were also on that list. But there's no question that Arizona's success is going to get Fish's name out there. And even if it's not, you know, a true blue blood, mm-hmm. I would have to think that, you know, he and his agent would see what kind of interest there is from football schools, right? The bottom line is he's doing a very good job coaching football at a basketball school, and you may be interested in moving on at some point to a place where football has a place, you know, a primacy on campus. So we'll see. But he's already been linked to jobs.
Okay, so there's some that are watching saying, well, we're still playing the season. How can this happen? This is how it goes. The agent is merely doing his job, getting Jed Fish's name out there. Like, I would find it very hard to believe that he would be the guy at Texas A&M when you have Dan Lanning's name out there. But I wouldn't be surprised if his name surfaced in Mississippi State. Why is that? You're still in the SEC. You're not the highest end SEC job. That position just came open. This is a way where the U of A, and this leads to the financial struggles. Is this Jed looking at it saying, I got great opportunities. I can get into the SEC. There's a couple opportunities right now. There's also Nick Saban's name out there. Rick Neuheisel's been talking openly about it, that the whispers are that this may be it for Nick, that he's looking around while he's enjoying it. He may walk away. So is this a matter? I'm only going off what Rick has said. You've talked to Rick. I've talked to Rick in the past. When you start dropping that maybe Alabama's going to come open, and these ADs are getting out in front of it because they know if Dan Lanning becomes available and we wait around and Nick does decide to leave, well, we're not going to get him. So is that part of it in all of this? And then well, the U of A financial trouble too. If you want to wrap all that together, U of A financial trouble too.
Well, certainly that is a huge issue, right? I mean, Fish, I don't know off the top of my head. I think Fish is making $3 million a year. $3.5 million a year, right? He's at the bottom end of the Pac-12, bottom end of the Power Five. Arizona is not in position. I mean, we should definitely talk about the financial issues, which are monumental and very serious in terms of sports, the future of Olympic sports, jobs, all that kind of thing. But they are not in position to offer Jed Fish $6-7 million a year for a long-term contract, whereas these other schools are, Mississippi State or whichever other gig comes open, absolutely can double his pay, right? And it's not, you know, he's not going to get the Alabama job, right? The sample size on Fish is too small. One right. winning season, right? In 3 years as a head coach, he's gotten one winning season. He's doing a great job, but Alabama is going to be looking for a top of the line. But the question is the trickle down effect, right?
Sure.
Alabama hires Lanning. Oregon goes out and hires somebody. Does Fish then take the replace the person who replaced Dan Lanning? Does yeah. Fish replace the person who replaced Kalen DeBoer at Washington? Does Fish replace the person who goes to Michigan State? Right. That's the question. And because of Arizona's financial issues, because it's a basketball school, you do, you know, I think it's only natural to wonder, you know, the bar for him to leave is probably not that high, right? It doesn't have to be Alabama. It could be a mid-level Power 5 school because of the opportunity presented by being a football-first university.
Okay. There's a lot there to unpack.
Lots.
And I want to go to U of A's financial struggles first, and I'm going to circle back into the Pac-12. So in a nutshell, for the people that are watching this and saying, what do you mean U of A is in financial trouble? Very granular, John. What's going on in Tucson?
It is hard to believe that this happened, but Arizona made a $240 million accounting mistake. If you could qualify that amount of money as an accounting mistake, which I don't think you can. I think it's a complete administrative failure that's going to cost a lot of people their jobs. And I think it's possible it's going to cost President Robert Robbins his job. This is a massive issue. They basically made a mistake and they have $240 million of cash available, less than they thought they did, right? And they're going to have draconian budget cuts, as Robbins told his faculty the other day. And those cuts include, I'm sure, major cuts within athletics, because athletics has contributed to the problem. That they athletics received like a $50-55 million loan during COVID. Understandable at the time, right? Pac-12 revenue had plunged. They needed money for operations, but that is not being paid back fast enough. Football attendance, Pac-12 revenues, none of those things are allowing Arizona to pay, the athletic department, to pay Central Campus back that $50 million. So Arizona athletics is contributing to the bigger problem. It is just a colossal issue across the campus. It's very unfortunate. Mm. Could cost jobs, could cost sports, and it could cost Robbins his job, frankly.
So in looking at the Jed Fish, circle back to that.
Yep.
Jed Fish is going to want a raise, deserves a raise. He's going to want to keep his staff together. They're going to want raises.
Yep.
Because of what is going on with this issue, and issue is probably too soft a term, the timing feels pretty good for him to say, yeah, I probably should get out of here before this gets really bad, right?
Certainly. Well, I think that's certainly a reasonable view of his thinking. We don't know exactly what he's thinking, right?
Right.
But we certainly know he has no ties to Tucson, no ties to Arizona. We also know they're going into the Big 12, where the NIL pool of resources for schools for recruiting is greater than Arizona's. Arizona State's facing the same issue going into the Big 12, right? There's a lot of football schools there whose alumni and donors contribute heavily to NIL endeavors. So there's a lot of challenges coming around the corner for Arizona football, financially, recruiting, all that kind of thing. And here's Fish, you know, his name may not be hotter than it's going to be over the next month, right? If they beat Utah and ASU, he's sitting on 9 wins, an incredible turnaround, whether they make the Pac-12 championship game or not. His stock is never going to be higher. So there's a decent chance he will leave. I would also point out, you know, there could be a job open in L.A. I don't think that's going to be the case. But
Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly, for your viewers, Yeah. You just don't know. What if UCLA loses its last two games in 6-6 and the Bruins decide, you know what, we need a change before we get into the Big Ten? I don't think that's going to happen, but it's on the spectrum of possibilities. Fish coached at UCLA. There's another potential spot, right? Well, this is all speculation, and we should be clear that I'm just thinking out loud here to try to provide the biggest range of possibilities for what is going to happen to Jed Fish. And you can't discount a whole, you know, most of the things you got to take with a grain, you know, more than a grain of salt, because the coaching carousel is a crazy thing, made crazier by conference turnover, you know, moving leagues, NIL, transfer portal, all those things have created this coaching carousel that is basically out of control starting in middle of November.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline, check out his content, of course, on sports360az.com. And you can follow John on social media on X Wilner Hotline. I want to get into U of A, Utah first, and then I'll get over to ASU, Oregon. But the Utes, are they spinning? Is it just they hit this tough part in their schedule? Do you think U of A can take down Utah this Saturday?
I do think they can, because for the first time since I can remember, Arizona can match up with Utah at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Utah always very physical, a lot of size and depth, and typically overruns Arizona, right? I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think the Arizona absolutely can hold up. The fact is, you also, Utah's running game is not what it's been because of injuries. They don't have, you know, obviously their quarterback, Cam Rising's out all year. They're playing a former walk-on. He's pretty good, but it is not the same Utah juggernaut at the line of scrimmage. And Arizona is monumentally improved up front. So I think Arizona absolutely could win the game. Utah coming off a tough loss in Seattle, right? So that favors Arizona as well. Very difficult back-to-back. I think the Cats have got a great chance to win. They got a great chance to win out and finish 9-3. And if they get the right breaks, it requires Oregon losing somewhere, but if they get the right breaks, they could end up playing Washington in the Pac-12 championship game, a team that they almost beat.
There's a lot there. I think over on ASU side, this is just me looking at Arizona State. What a tremendous opportunity for Kenny Dillingham. They have two bowl games. That's how I'm looking at it. You get to take on Oregon at home, 2:00 p.m, national television. That's a bowl game for a team that's been put on probation this year. No bowl game. Then you get your arch rival. This game usually is on Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, Thanksgiving weekend. It's usually on opposite of Alabama and Auburn. Nobody's watching this game usually. The storylines are usually one coach is going to get fired. The other coach is going for his fourth win. It's a total who cares game. So I think for the first time in many, many years, and I'm always one that says, because I didn't go to ASU, I didn't go to U of A, I don't care. Territorial Cup sounds great to people here in Arizona. Not that big of a deal at all. Tiny in terms of the national ecosystem of college athletics, John. But for the first time, it's like U of A is really good. ASU's not. ASU can go in there and beat them, and it's their bowl game. There's my case for ASU the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it is a great setup for Arizona State. And, you know, they've basically treated, it seems like they've treated every week like a bowl game, because they, other than Utah, they have played a lot of teams close, right? You can't fault the effort at all, even though they're not playing for a bowl bid. They were close against, I mean, think about it. They were a couple plays away from beating Cal and Colorado and even Washington. They could have a winning record with a few better bounces of the ball. They could be sitting there, you know, at like 5-5.
But John, are those trap games? Are those trap games for those teams? Are those games like everybody's down here already saying, oh, Oregon's in a trap game. They're not even watching this team. Is it trap game? Was the Washington game a trap game where it's just they were flat because it's ASU and they're not any good? Or is it that Kenny has them in the right direction? See,
well, I think there's something there. Certainly there are trap games for the other team, but for Arizona State, look, I mean, they're a MASH unit, right? They're a MASH unit with no bowl bid at stake. They could have folded it up. ASU folded up, last year? They could have done the same for Dillingham, but he's kept them energized. He's kept them playing hard. He's adjusting tactically on a weekly basis. you know, the quarterback situation, as we've seen, has been, you know, brutal with the injuries. I give them a ton of credit for what they've done. And it doesn't matter what the circumstances are for the opponent. What matters is ASU's record and ASU's performance, and they've done very well. And I don't think they're going to beat Oregon, right? I mean, it's a little bit like 4 years ago when Oregon went to Tempe late November and ASU pulled an upset that got knocked Oregon out of the playoff race. I don't think we're going to see that. Oregon is better than this year than they were then, and ASU is not as talented as it was. But they could give Oregon a tough game, and they certainly could beat Arizona. I mean, it would be something if ASU kept Arizona out of the Pac-12 championship. Yeah. But we are facing that as a possibility. Again, not likely, just like, you know, Jed Fish going to UCLA or going wherever, not likely. But if you're presenting the broadest spectrum of possibilities, yeah, ASU could knock Arizona out of the Pac-12 championship game. What a story that would be.
Okay, if that happened, so when ASU beat Nebraska with Jake Plummer here, they tore down the goalposts. I went and found the goalposts, and I had them brought to a steakhouse, Monty's Steakhouse in Tempe. He's no longer there. And we cut up the goalposts, and they sold the goalposts, and it was $150 a piece. One of them still on my shelf behind me. If they were to beat Oregon and U of A or just beat one of them, the goalposts would end up in Tempe Town Lake. It would, and it would be fabulous. All right.
Oh, absolutely. It would be, what a story it would be, right? I mean, given where things were, what was it, August 25th or something, when Dillingham woke up, gets a call or text from Ray Anderson, we're not going to be in a bowl game. Think about from there to what the climb to what they'd have if they beat Oregon or Arizona. Incredible.
Yeah. And if I'm a president or athletic director and that were to happen the next couple of weeks, I'd say, why don't you just pick up the phone and go check in on that little kid over at Arizona State and see how he's doing? Because that place.
Yeah. Now that's, but that's for sure. But that's a good point for our larger discussion here. Dillingham, obviously, he's got ASU in his DNA, right? And so Jed Fish has no ties to Arizona. And if you're, that's two contrasting situations. And there is a benefit to hiring somebody who has a personal connection to your school or your community, your city, right? And for Pac-12 schools that have often hired coaches from that have roots in the Midwest, Washington's facing this with Kalen DeBoer, right? He's a Dakotan. You're much more likely to lose your guy if he doesn't have ties to your school or your community. And so there's some value to having that local connection with your head coach in football or men's basketball.
Okay, last question. Let's go back on the bigger topic of Lanning DeBoer. As you and I are sitting here on this Monday in the middle of November, do you believe, John Wilner, that one, both, none leave their current situations?
I do not believe Lanning would go to A&M. I don't know why he'd go, leave Oregon for A&M, right? Oregon could pay him. You know, they gave him a bump last year. They'll give him another bump. And Oregon's a better job, right? I mean, A&M is a tough place, especially with Texas now coming into the SEC and gotten their act together. DeBoer, I think you have to gauge DeBoer at this point on the likelihood of DeBoer leaving based on whether you think Jim Harbaugh is coming back at Michigan. Will he get fired because of the scandal? Will he leave for the NFL? Right. He worked for the Raiders. He loved Al Davis. I don't know if Harbaugh's tempted. At this point, I'm leaning toward Harbaugh staying at Michigan. So that means I'm leaning toward DeBoer staying at Washington. Okay. But we will see. It's going to be very interesting. The Pac-12, which seems pretty stable on the coaching front, could have two, three, maybe even four openings. We haven't even talked about the microscopic possibility that Dion goes somewhere. I don't think it's going to happen. Is it on the spectrum of possibilities? It probably is, right? Whether it's the NFL or Texas A&M or another job, right? Mm-hmm. Could Dion leave? You can't ignore anything until those guys are absolutely back for next season.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Whittingham could retire. That's out there every year.
That is out there every year.
Every year. This is it. You never know. Lincoln Riley, you know, you and I talked about it last week. If the SC alumni base says, you know, we're not happy here, you think the buyout for Jimbo was big? Get lost. Right. Check right here. We'll make it right. happen.
That, or Jonathan helpful. Smith. I mean, you know, obviously yeah, Jonathan Smith
sure.
is incredibly well-respected, done a phenomenal job, you know, and Oregon State's future is so up in the air that you wouldn't be surprised at all if Jonathan Smith goes somewhere. And like, if you're connecting the dots on the just a dartboard or message board or whatever it is right. we're doing here, you know, Jonathan Smith grew up in Pasadena. So I could kind of leave it at that.
That's a lot of stuff there, Joe.
A lot of stuff. And most of it may not happen, but it's just, it's good for fans to see yeah. the broad spectrum of possibilities here because the carousel is starting to spin and it's going to get bananas in the next month or 6 weeks.
There is John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, and we're back with more after this timeout.